Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today for OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales. I'm Kelly Bloomer.
And I'm Tom Bloomer.
OK, Tom, you're our sales pro. In 30 words or less, can you tell us about this podcast?
I'm going to try. You know, us salespeople like to talk, Kelly.
You sure do.
All right, 30 words or less.
Can you do it?
Well, if you're a sales pro and you're looking to grow in your sales career, if you like good, lively sales discussion, I think this is going to be a show for you. I've walked your walk for over 30 years in sales. I've knocked on the doors and overcome the same obstacles I think you may be facing as a seller, a sales manager, and as a VP of sales. I currently help assess, build, and train high-performing media sales teams. Well, Kel?
Yeah, you really went over 30 words.
But I think it was good.
I do too.
Okay, so I hope our listeners will be all set. And hey, let's roll up our shirt sleeves and let's get at it.
So enjoy listening to Tom and his guests talk sales. Okay, Tom, who's our boomer teaching us sales today?
Kelly, I'm the only boomer that's going to be on the show today. We have a rather young guest.
Really? That doesn't come across very often.
No, it doesn't. But I tell you, he's wise beyond his years. It's really cool. I loved our guest today. He leads what's called the Sales Rebellion. And this is the first episode, Cal. No editing.
Is he a Star Wars fan?
Well, that I don't know.
He's in the Rebellion.
Yeah, I think it's a different rebellion. Gotcha. But you know what? Probably has some of the same core beliefs. I don't know. But, you know, our guest, he grew up in a family business.
Okay.
Before he was old enough to, you know, to be playing Star Wars, He was learning about the copier business and doing things. And he really grew up in family values. He became the copier warrior, which is really cool. You're going to hear that story. But okay. But his thing is all about his beliefs and his foundation. And he's become an amazing sales trainer, but it's all about taking your beliefs and your core foundations first. And that's where everything starts. It's really cool.
Very cool. All right. Well, let's listen.
Well first, yes. You know, I want people to understand what I believe in.
What is that?
I believe they're going to really enjoy this episode. I really do. I think this is the type of thing that, you know, whether you're a salesperson, whether you're a sales leader, you need to hear a message like this periodically. And if this doesn't get you really thinking about why you do what you do, and hopefully in sales, motivated to go help your customers, I don't know what will.
All right. Well, then after all that, definitely need to listen to this.
Now we're ready.
Now we're ready?
Yes.
All right, let's go.
Hey, this is Ryan from Cary, North Carolina. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
Dale, I've been in sales for 30 years. I flat out love sales. My goal today is I want to rise above. All right, so I want no more mediocre sales presentations, no more mediocre follow-up, no more mediocre connections. I want to challenge you, and I think you're up for it. I want you to turn me into a rebel today. Okay, that's the goal. I want you to really turn me into a sales rebel today. And not just me, I want everyone listening to be a rebel. I want them, as soon as this show's over, I want them going over, searching for, subscribing to your podcast, Selling Local. All right, so no pressure on you. You can handle this, right?
Yeah, no pressure at all, man.
You're in sales. This is what, you know, this is it. You just walked in front of a prospect, and now you got to be on. You got to turn me into a sales rebel.
Yeah, that's easy. So, all right, can I start with my story, or do you want me to start dive right in?
It's your thing now. This is your challenge. How do you start? What are you going to do?
Well, I think it's important that people understand the foundations of what I have created before they even look at what I've created to begin with. If we don't understand the roots of what it is that we believe in and what it is that we practice to begin with, then we will find ourselves lost at a certain point. So my story starts back in 1984 when my father founded his copier firm. I was actually born a year later in 1985 with, as they say, toner running through my veins. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One, because the copier world is interesting. You will typically find when you go and find a copier company that it's a father-son business, father-daughter business, mother-son business, like 90% of the time. but also because
a corner copy store, right? I can remember.
There still are in some small cities across the United States where they still also have a vacuum cleaner store. You'll find a corner store, you know, that sells copiers, furniture, toner, right? They still exist. It's a wild thought, but it's a very nostalgic one for me. And it's a very romantic one as well too, because you know, for my entire life, I got to spend, you know, every waking moment outside of school and hanging with my friends at my father's business, getting to learn the ins and outs, and furthermore, falling in love with the process of small business, the relationships that are built within it, the way that they operate, the whole nine yards, you know, and it starts from, you know, wandering the halls as a small child, you know, playing hide and seek in the giant warehouse with all the lease return copy machines, as we used to call it, the graveyard, you know, where you would look out into like a sea of hundreds of copiers that were being used for parts or shipped back to leasing partners.
Great hiding places, right? Great places to duck behind. And
you could stay in there for a week and I bet nobody would find you if you got into the right machine. They used to have these little bases that when you were small enough and young enough, you could like crawl into the base and hide. And so that was like the number one spot, because if you had 100 machines, if you just picked the right one, you could be in there for hours. So, you know, and then it evolved into the ideology of learning the business more. So understanding, you know, even like the macros, like payroll, you know, all the way down to the micros of like making sure that the floors have been swept and that everything's clean, you know, so.
Those things don't just happen, right?
We learned how to wear every hat, right? And a small business owner, that's what they do, right? They take out the trash on Friday when everybody decided to go home earlier, they let them go home early, right? So there's a lot more, what I should say is that when people look at business and they look at small business in general, I don't think they really understand what it is that a small business does. And what I mean by that is that it provides, right, for the community more so than anything. And sure, like, you know, GE opens an office down the street and they employ 500 people. That's a great thing. But there's a disconnect inside of a corporation like that between people. Those 500 people don't know each other, right? We were in an office, you know, at one point my dad had about 20 employees. We knew everybody's name, everybody's kids, everybody's spouse, right? You know, we were very intimate. And so because of it, we built a large community and that extended to our customer base. You know, so my dad had a couple hundred accounts back in the 90s when I was a kid, and I can remember like visiting every single one of them, right? Including groups like the Kennedy Space Center, NASA, right? So we had the big dogs all the way down to the financial advisor that, you know, did business right out of his garage, right? And I think that those dynamics really helped me to understand what sales is. Sales is service. Sales is servant leadership, more so. Sales is the identity of being able to help somebody at its core. You know, for those that really need it dumbed down, like, what is servant leadership? Well, servant leadership is leading without expectations. And servant leadership is not pushing product. Servant leadership doesn't have an agenda, right? And so when we started in those very core spots and foundational spots inside of my upbringing, then you can better understand what a rebellion is and what a sales rebel stands for, is that we stand for those principles. We stand in the shadow of my father, who I lost in 2016 to cancer, that I'm trying to continue the legacy of. I want everyone that shakes my hand to feel as if they met him and that they knew him, even if they didn't. And because I'm driven by those types of emotions, those types of core principles, that type of value, you know, internally, I can't lose. there's nothing that can stop me. And sure, there's some arrogance there, but I believe in a healthy amount of it. I believe that it is important for us to have a little bit of arrogance, as my buddy Jeff Bajorek says. It's one of my favorite things that he talks about. Little bit of arrogance, a little healthy bit of arrogance, right?
Have you spoken on his podcast? Great in the buy.
I love that guy, man. I love his meticulous thought process, and he's a sniper to me in the sales world, right? So where I'm like, you know, a painter, like a very abstract painter, where when you see my painting, you're like, what did you paint? What was that? But you can't help but look, you know, not look away. So I digress. The foundations of the sales rebellion are also built in the copier world. We were a commodity product. Sales is the second worst job in the world, according to all the statistics to have, right? And then I'm in the copier industry, which is like the third worst inside of the industry, inside of the vertical itself, to have on top of it. You know, used car salesman, insurance salesman, copier guy, right? Those are the top three. And I mean, we were even worse than door-to-door salespeople that were coming to your house, right? So I got into an industry that was hated by the consumer, and I sought to change that narrative. And instead of trying to force it, though, I met my buyers where they are. One of the principles of the rebellion is to meet people where they are. And I believe that all salespeople should take that approach as well, too, right? So coming back to it, the identity of selling a copy machine in a sea of 17 competitors that all had multiple salespeople and managers and VPs, and some of them were, you know, $50 million to $100 million companies, and my dad and I are doing a million. Right. You know, and a lot of, and then there's a lot of them that were also doing a million alongside of us. So how do we differentiate ourselves? We created personal branding for the employees. I was the copier warrior. We created what we like to call in the rebellion first touch tools or market tools. And what those are very tangible, very actionable concepts. Right. And really where we got it from was being Orlandoans, born and raised, by the way, I'm second generation Orlando native. We understand Disney. Now, we're not like Disney freaks by any means, especially in my family. We're just kind of like, yeah, it'd be cool to go. But I've never paid to get in. Also, I should put that as a caveat. All you listeners out there, here's the hack. When you live in Orlando, you got a friend that works at Disney, and they've got 46 passes a year, and all you got to do is just be nice to them, and they'll get you in at some point.
And you still live? You still live there?
I do. I do. I actually.
I can't wait to tell my wife we got a place to stay next time we go to Disney. This is fantastic.
And you do. And even if you got 20 kids, you're welcome here, because the house that I own is actually my father's. It's my childhood home. And so when he passed away, I bought it before I could get put back on the market, and paid off his final debt essentially. And I'm living in where the legacy began for my family. And one of the things that my father did here in this house is that he welcomed all shapes and sizes to stay with us. We used to have people, I'm looking at a couch right now. We used to have people, I'd wake up, you know, from my room and come out of the hallway, and they'd be sleeping on the couch. I'd be wondering, like, what is this? You know, but it was,
who is this person?
Yeah, those in need, those going through hard times, missionaries from other countries coming back to the States for a couple of weeks before they leave again. There were some great stories. You know, we had criminals and meth addicts, and like, I'm talking like the works, because my father believed in them. My father believed in the rehabilitation process. My father believed that we should trust, and that if they stole from us or if they did harm to us, that it's okay. Because again, our altruistic approach is to influence them. And you can't do that without getting into their shoes, without diving deep, right? So all principles within the rebellion. And that takes me back to the ideology of Disney and how we created, you know, our first touch pieces and market tools, which are a big principle inside of the rebellion. And I'll just give you an example. Imagine that a 6-foot cardboard cutout is waiting in your office when you came back, you know, from a bathroom break. And it was me. And a life-size picture of me and dress clothes pulling a sword out of a golden copier in the middle of the woods. And it had big text on the top that said, every morning he wakes up believing this is his job. And there was a handwritten note popped on that thing that you would then pull off and read. And I would even like scent things. So, you know, because I believe in the five senses effects as well too, like touch, taste, feel, like the whole nine yards, I would give people a full experience. Right. And imagine that happened. And that in that note, it said, hey, I've been trying to get a hold of you and I haven't been able to get your attention. And I figured this probably would do it.
Yeah, I think it would. Absolutely.
So even the basic, you know, principle around just attention in general and time, you know, are big pieces of what a rebel stands for and what a rebel lives for. So
and they're not getting any of that from that big chain that's doing, you know, the 15 million and that, none of that touch, right?
These guys are dialing for dollars, minimal, you know, amounts of those dollars as well too, right? And they're burning out fast. And so they're going through people every couple of years at the most, right? A lot of times in our industry, especially in this hyperinflated market in Orlando, it was like 90 days and you'd be fired, you know, especially depending on your age and your experience. So the industry is very ageist, Right. It will hire you at 50 years old because you've worked at three copier companies. It will fire you within 90 days if you don't write business, because how can you be 50 years old in an industry that you've been in for 25 years and not know how to sell something in 90 days? Well, the problem is that our industry doesn't work like that. Our industry is based on relationships. It's based on time. It's based on the idea of the long game. The average lease is 42 months, right? And so if you try to sell something in 90 days, you better find somebody that's at the end of that lease, right? Is the concept. So there's a lot of dynamics to it. And I like telling these stories, because I think when people listen to them, then they can apply the bigger picture of what sales is to themselves as well too, and even in their own industries. There's certain things even in the copywriter realm that, you know, when I would meet people that had been in it for 5 years and I would show them some ideas and concepts, they would go, "Wow, who taught you that?" As if like it was some kind of secret. And in my mind, I'm thinking, this is just common sense, folks, right? So at the same time too, the other competitors were not being innovative or creative or trying to develop anything beyond just the transaction, right? So those are the foundations.
They're just
right?
What? They're price and name. That's pretty much it. Dialing for dollars and price and name.
Yep. Get a proposal out as fast as you can. Slam a deal home even faster. The copier industry doesn't believe in sending an electronic quote. It believes in being in front of you so that it can close you. It can strong arm you, right? Even in 2020. Right. You know, when people when the pandemic hit and people were having to do, you know, a Zoom call to present a proposal or a contract, it was strange for folks, you know, for the most part. And now, thankfully, the copyright world was also, you know, an essential business. Right. And it was a majority of our client base at the time, at the beginning of 2020. It's now only like 30 or 40% of our total business, but it thrived, you know, from the perspective of how we helped them pivot, right? But again, like imagine teaching a guy that's in his 50s that has been sitting in front of people for the last 25 years how to get on a Zoom call to negotiate a contract. I mean, they would like their skin would crawl just hitting send on a proposal that's digital, right? That they were leaving with someone. Because if it was in your hand and you were face to face, you never really had it. You could just say, "Cool, I'll just take this with me. Let me know when you're ready and we'll get back together." I mean, that was sort of some of the tactics of the copier space, right? The old, you know, throw the pen down, make them sign, right? You know, concepts. But I digress. Those are the things that were abundant in my industry. And so my mindset was scarce. And because of it, I started writing more business than you could imagine. I went from being the worst copier sales rep in the world to writing what we call net new business. So a new mark, never done business with my organization before. You know, anywhere between 50 and 70 a year, my average was in the 60 range, right? The national average for a rep, just based on statistics and people that have studied it to some extent, is about 12, right? So here's a kid every year over doing 60 plus. And so imagine the kind of growth from that, and then the sustained growth, because I had a system in place for myself before I deemed it the rebellion system to stay in touch, the aftermarket effect, right? The idea of in 5 years, they're going to buy again. And so for the next 5 years, we have to continue to earn the business. So little things, little thoughts, little principles that have everything to do with building the relationship, staying in touch, being the expert, but not just like the expert from the perspective of, you know, I'm really good at selling copiers, or I know the machine like the back of my hand, but the skills that I have, the network that I have, the acumen that I've developed, the passion that I bring to the table, those types of skills, the intrinsic skills, right, that a lot of people stay away from and they don't talk about because they think, oh, this is business. No, heck no, it's business, but heck no, that stereotype has to go, right? You don't have to hide who you are from people. Matter of fact, the more they know who you are, the easier it is for them to build trust and credibility with you in the first place. And so back it up, use that proof pudding. And so the rebellion was formed out of this identity of becoming a number one rep, becoming a VP of sales, living the dream, telling the story, making all the money, blah, 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 who cares? But the legacy that I've been leaving, right? The legacy my father has left me to be able to carry on as well, the tradition of the Dupree family and what a real rebel is, one that stands for hope, the kind of hope though, that is affecting change and not just sitting back, you know, idly hoping for change, but out actionably creating it. And so because of that, in 2019, I quit my cushy corporate job at Xerox, you know, which is the second company that I worked for in my career. I had two companies in total that I was employed by outside of my crazy teenage years of playing in a heavy metal band touring all over the US and being a barista at a coffee shop. And I quit that job because I looked at the identity of what sales had stood for at that point, and that I could affect it. I knew I could. I know, and I know I still will, and I know until my last breath that I'll have something to say about it. And because of that, I took a risk, and it's now 2021. I'm coming up on 2 years of being in business. We've got a dozen people working for us, and we got students all over the world, you know, from Hong Kong to Australia to Europe, you know, all the way to the United States and Canada. Can't forget Canada. Those are our boys, right? And the identity of what we're creating, that was a movement. It's more than just a sales training firm. We're pushing people into uncomfortable positions to cause growth, to cause strength, to cause them to be able to also build others around them. Community concepts. And that's the Sales Rebellion for you.
Fantastic. So it sounds to me we're not in the sales business. We're in the relationship business. And that's really a key thing that you're trying to preach there, right?
Yes. You know, we believe in people over products, community over commission checks. We believe in giving experiences instead of performing pitches. And we believe in fellowship over negotiations. So those are our principles, and they are all tied back to the core value of humans and how we should treat each other.
All right. Couple things. I mean, you covered a lot of stuff that I really kind of want to delve into. One of the things that it's great to hear, you know, I've read a lot of your posts that you put out, and I got a feel for some of the things I thought were very important to you. But getting to hear them firsthand, that it really makes a difference. You know, when you get to see that, you're talking about common sense things, right? That should be common sense to a certain point. You're the copier warrior. You're out there in a very difficult sales environment. Give us a couple of those common sense things, because I agree. I've worked with a lot of sales leaders that struggle as leaders because the things that are common sense to them, they're managing people that aren't doing them. So one or two of the things that maybe somebody's completely missing that you look at, hey, this is common sense you got to do.
Yeah, let's pop into leadership roles and talk about that. So one of the things that I think is a travesty is that we have quotas in the copier realm. And that, so like the first thing a human asks when they show up to a new job interview or switching from one company to the next, what's the monthly quota? It's one of the first things they want to know. And because we've enslaved people to the quota in the sales world, but really in the copier space, it's dumb how we've punished people for not adhering to a number. Right? Instead of trying to hit a target or a goal or build something that's sustainable, instead, we just constantly tell people, hit this number, right? Hit this quota. And when you hit it, then you're successful. Well, guess what? Most of the time when you hit that quota and you're stretching and you're pulling and you're trying to make it work, there ain't no profit in that deal anymore. You're not making any money. You get a commission check for $200 and it's the most embarrassing day of your life, right? From the perspective of your self-worth. Right. So it tears people down. It belittles them. The quota does. The idea to
get a great metrics. You do get a great reward, though, when you stretch and hit that quota, they give you a higher quota next quarter. So that's a great reward. Right.
Thankfully, it's annually that you get that reward. But yeah, what a freaking fantastic reward. Right. Hey, you did $1 million this year, the most anybody's ever done in this company. Now you need to do 2 million next year. Like, okay, that makes perfect sense. So yes, that is also a travesty inside of the sales world in general, but in the copier space, it's pretty intense how it works. But I would say that from the perspective of leadership, that leaders, the common sense is that people don't connect with a number. They're not connected with that. They fear that number. They have anxiety over that number. They worry about that number. Right. Instead of creating numbers, we should create targets. We should help people to intrinsically be motivated. What is it that's driving you to be here, to be in sales, to do this in the first place? Nobody just wants to make a lot of money. On the surface level, yeah, that's definitely why people get in sales. But there are bigger picture perspectives behind that. I got a student that's got a single mom and he wants to buy her a home and a car and he wants to provide for her. Right. And so tapping into those pieces of his motivation intrinsically is going to drive him to become more successful. You'll find him on the phone at 6:30 at night, not because he's trying to make money, but because he's trying to win, right? Because when he wins, so does his legacy, so do the people that he's trying to provide for. So if we can get people to focus from a different perspective and angle around what it is their true outcomes they seek, as far as the true outcomes are concerned, you know, then the number won't matter. You won't have to worry about somebody hitting a $30,000 or $40,000 a month quota, because at the end of the quarter, they'll easily be at $150,000, $200,000, right? At the end of the year, they'll be at $1 million or a little bit less, but still they'll get way above that $400,000, $500,000 that you're hoping that they, crossing your fingers that they maybe could get to, you know, with, and still have profit in the deal on top of it, right? So,
right. And so you're basically changing their focus, right? Away from the number that's giving them the anxiety, giving them the stress, focus on something that's going to be inspiring to them and that's going to make them successful, and then let them go after it.
Yeah. And a good one to talk about is Braden Business Systems. I'm totally supporting their gear right now. They're one of my oldest clients at this point, and God bless them for becoming rebels and at our inception and then sticking with our philosophies and our principles. You know, we love them dearly. And so it's important to talk about companies like theirs. They don't have quotas. They have targets. They have a recommended target. They don't say, oh, you didn't hit your quota, you're not getting your full commission this month. You know, you have a set structure and plan that is not punished based on activity, right? Instead, you know, you can't make money if you're not selling. And that's the principle of what they teach, right? That these commissions, we're not going to choke you out on what you're going to make, but you need to understand that if you have a goal of making six figures inside of our industry, which is very easy to do, by the way, it's very easy to do. If that's your goal, then let's go hit it together as a unit. Like if it takes a couple months for us to get rolling and at 8 months, you know, we're still not at quota, but at 12 months, you know, our target, but at 12 months, we've hit your target, then we're winning, right? So taking a long game approach and perspective to the people that we serve internally inside of our organizations. And again, like serving them, you know, because I stated that just then in that statement is more than just driving them to sell, you know, driving them to be better, because that's your agenda, right, for them. They need to want those things. They need to be motivated by that, right? So we don't listen enough to our people. We don't connect with them enough either.
Mm-hmm. As I'm listening to you talk about leadership and how they're building that relationship with their seller, to me, it ties right into what I'm assuming you're teaching a seller in their relationship with the client. You know, they have to be working with the client towards focusing in on what do they want to get out of this? You know, what is a win for them? How do I solve your pain? And so it's got to be that same approach then as our sellers are working with their potential clients or their actual clients.
Yes. And furthermore, we teach a VP of sales or a manager how to do the same thing with their people. And, you know, outside of who they're selling to and with their spouses and with their mom and dad and with their neighbors. You know, we have this ideology of what community truly looks like and stands for and how you can develop yours, you know, and silence is the best way to, you know, kind of just slip away and off this earth and have people say, man, whatever happened to that person, right? Even you could be the richest dude on the block. Right. But silence is going to keep you from really having the true wealth, right? Not the monetary side, but the reputation, the ability to be able to speak in others' lives and change their outcomes as well, too. We have walked away from the identity of being able to develop our communities. I know I sound like a broken record here, but it's such an important piece of the puzzle. So we don't just teach people like, here's how you talk to your customer. We help them to understand that it's no different than how they would talk to a loved one or a friend.
So let me ask you, that's one of the things I noticed on your LinkedIn page that I did want to talk to you about. I work with a lot of people in media sales, and in media sales, they usually have a geography. So let's say Orlando, they're working in the Orlando community. You talk about that territory and the community and how important that is. If someone's out there right now and they haven't really looked at it from a community standpoint and worked on their relationships there, what do you recommend? How do they use that and understand why that's such a vital tool in how they're networking?
So let's look at it two ways. One would be, you know, the person lives in the local community. And the second would be that they live in Orlando and they sell in Detroit, right? To a particular vertical selling.
Why would anybody in Orlando want to sell in Detroit? Do you know what Detroit is like in the winter?
Yeah, it sucks.
But go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Don't ever take me there.
I spoke with Jeff this week. And Jeff, you mentioned him earlier. I'm sure he was a little bit colder than I was when I was talking to him. So
yeah. God bless him for populating a state that I don't ever want to go to. So in the winter, that is. I'll go in the summer. But if we take the approach of it's not so much about whether you live there or not either, right? As much as it is about understanding the community, building a reputation within it, and creating synergy outside of what you sell as well too. You know, so if I am selling into another state and I don't live there, I have to do my research, not just about my buyer, but like, what's the most popular food spot in the area, right? What's the most popular hangout spot, you know, for all the kids? You know, where am I going to find my buyer outside of his office, you know, or her office? Where am I going? How am I going to connect beyond that? I see that they went to the University of Central Florida, right? Go Knights. You know, who cares? You know, sure, alum, you know, fellow alum might care a little bit, but when you have 60,000 classmates that you just graduated with, it doesn't really matter anymore. It's about the connection more so than anything. So, you know, we teach people the sales wanderer theory inside of the sales rebellion, which is this identity of being curious. And when we lead with that curiosity, that we learn more about our community and how it's impacted by the people that we're trying to serve as well too. So we find out that the guy at the pest control company that has 100 employees and is one of the largest in the area that we're trying to sell a SaaS product to, or some phone systems or life insurance. We find out that he sponsors a local T-ball team, and we find out that he doesn't have any kids, and that's why he sponsors a local T-ball team. He's always wanted them, and because he's not been able to, right? He has that fulfillment in other ways in his life. And now we've just gotten so much deeper in connecting with this person and our knowledge of who they are and what's important to them, that we can communicate with them differently, that we can speak to them in a way that they'll hear us instead of just pitching them a product and trying to set an appointment, right? And it's not about getting somebody on the phone and saying, you know, hey, I stalked you and figured all this stuff out about you. It's about sharing their moral compass. It's about creating familiarity in the way that our talk tracks work even. So if I know my community, if I'm developing my community, I can create familiarity, which is a very comfortable place for somebody that just met you because you're a stranger. But if you can create familiarity within that strange occurrence, you know, you like meeting somebody and saying, hi, you look so familiar, or I feel like I met you, or there, you get this strange feeling when I'm around you that I know you, you know, that's connection, right? More so than anything else. And yeah, sure, maybe they saw you at the grocery store one time, right? But that's connection more so than anything.
They saw you on a 6-foot cutout last time they went into a copy store, right?
It's in your boss's office a couple of weeks ago as a cardboard cutout. That's me, yeah.
Now, I'm wondering, you know, when you start to teach this, so let's say you're working with a company right now and you're training 12 of their sellers. I got to assume that there's three or four that as you're talking about this, they're looking at you saying, boy, that's a lot of extra work. You know, that's a little bit more. Do they have to have a certain personality where they're born into being able to do that? Can you teach that to somebody that doesn't see it the first time you tell them about this?
I love this question and the objection that people give to me around it, because yeah, you know, we live in a time where everybody talks about in the sales world about the importance of personalization. And then, you know, we teach people how to personalize things based on a LinkedIn content post, right? This is the thing, is that a lot of the way that the sales world is teaching people right now how to do personalization, sure, it works, right? But is it really altruistic in the way that we're approaching it in the first place? Like, I'm gonna tell you right now, every time anybody has ever written me an email and said, hey, I loved your post about this, this, and this, and I talked about that. By the way, have you ever thought about using this type of product to boost your whatever for blah, blah, blah? It's like,
that sounded like a very smooth transition, Dale. Where'd they lose you? I don't get it.
And they lost me from the very beginning, to be honest with you, because I can see it coming a mile away now, right? And I think most buyers can too. So you got lackadaisical sellers, right, out there. And so if your competition is lackadaisical, then that approach can have a 50-50 chance, right? However, this is the problem, is that outside of that, everybody listening to me right now knows that they make 60 calls a day, they maybe talk to one or two people. They maybe set one or two appointments, right? And sure, you had a bang up week this week because you did a bunch of personalization and one of your call blocks, even though the rest of them were failures, you set 9 appointments and you're really proud of yourself. Well, imagine writing 60 plus net new companies a year in an industry that writes 12 on average per rep. Okay. I didn't do that because I was writing those emails. I did that because I was getting into the culture and the living ecosystem of somebody else and what their walk was all about in the first place. It doesn't mean that I was bending my rules or becoming a Democrat when I was a Republican, or, you know, I wasn't doing anything like that. But what I was doing was connecting.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being a Democrat, Dale, but go ahead. Just keep going there, right?
Hey, I didn't say that, bro. Don't edit this to where it makes it sound like it either, okay? I trust you. So, but again, it's not time consuming. It takes seconds. It takes seconds to learn about somebody. It takes seconds to call, you know, an acquaintance of that person, you know, that you're networking with. Like, hey, I saw, you know, John Smith. You tell me a little bit about them. Oh yeah, dude's 90 miles an hour with his hair on fire. Yeah, he loves eating at that Sbarro's pizza down the road though. Cool. I'm gonna drop 6 slices of it off at his office and misspell his name in pepperoni. You know, like the idea again is this identity of being able to connect with people, right? And understanding like in culture, what's important? Family's important, fellowship's important, you know, entertainment's important, music, food, right? There's all these things that we disconnect in business. We go, oh, that's not professional. Give me a break. And furthermore, it doesn't take that much time. People that make the time excuse are doing just that, making a time excuse.
Yeah. Well, you're hitting on two things that to me I've always seen are really important. The first is I've always believed that one of the biggest problem in sales today is bad salespeople do sell things. You know, you can go in and be really bad at what you do, but if you have a product that they need and you go in at a certain price, you make sales. So they start thinking, hey, this can be easy, okay? And they're not doing the things that you're talking about. That's the person that's selling 12 in that month and not 60 because they, oh, I got this figured out. And the other thing is people just, they'll try something, you know, go and they'll do it incorrectly. And then they assume it doesn't work. So you're talking to somebody how to build that relationship for the connection. And then they're going to look at you and say, oh, I did 20 connections. I personalized them and nobody got back. And they didn't do it exactly the way you're showing them. So they just assume that you know, that doesn't work. Right. How do you work through that as you're training with people?
So we teach people the principle of curiosity and the way that we cause it as well, too, not just in the way that we lead it. So we call it undeniable curiosity where yeah, you know, personalization helps someone to feel familiarity and we want them to feel familiarity, but we can do that through a more of a mass personalization concept is the identity of it, which is that people are looking for their tribe. And so how do you translate that you're part of that tribe? You know, they say that like 80% of people in the world like the category of comedy or humor, right? And really they say 80%, but that's probably because they just talked to some old curmudgeons and it screwed it up, right? But I believe personally that it's
I don't want to meet the people that don't.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's all the people that live in Jeff Bajorek's cold neighborhood during the months of December and January, right?
That's what. So well, now, like you said, we have to walk in their shoes. I understand why they don't like it right now. So
yes, exactly. So it's about, you know, meeting people where they are and also, you know, understanding timing and understanding appropriateness. But the big picture here is that like we send what we call the Rebel Letter Campaign. There's a few different letters inside of it. I'll highlight one right now, which we call the coffee stain letter, for example. We send a letter that's been trifolded into an envelope that has a big fat coffee drip stain in the middle of it, like a circular stain. And it has your name on it, right? And so when you open it up, the first thing that it says is you're probably wondering why there's a big coffee stain or, you know, we have copy that's pretty unique to this, right? But the gist of it is that we say 90% of the sales and marketing that comes across your desk is going to end up in the garbage. Well, you can turn this one into a coffee coaster. So at least it was useful. And so people, again, like that creates relevance because they hate sales calls. And so now you're relevant because you're relating. And then furthermore, it creates familiarity. They go, you're right. I believe that too. And then beyond that, they feel that you've gone out of your way to do something outside of the box, which personalizes it in the way that they view it. We have a connection request on LinkedIn where we tell people that I'm a Nigerian prince and I have a wealth of, you know, 9 million, whatever, you know, waiting in a bank account for you. And all you have to do is hit connect on this request. And I'll tell you right now that I don't have one sales rep that we use that kind of template for that doesn't get a laugh out of people in the midst of that concept. But, you know, we don't then turn around and then pitch people at the same time too, right? We allow a relationship to naturally be built. Even with the coffee stain letter inside of the Rebel Letter Campaign, we, you know, and there's multiple letters. So if the person doesn't respond, You got four more to send them. And at one point they're collecting them like baseball cards, right? You're just like, keep them coming. This is great. And you're becoming more than just the expert in your product. You're becoming the best salesperson they've ever encountered. And that's powerful.
No, absolutely. And it, you know, it goes back to some of the things you've been talking about, that long-term approach versus the short-term and how you're building things.
Hey, listeners, it's Kelly Bloomer here to tell you the show is brought to you by Bloomer Associates. If you visit our website found in your show notes, you'll find we offer sales training, talent assessment for hiring and team development, and individual coaching for sales pros and managers. We bring over 30 years in media sales and leadership experience. If you enjoy listening to OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales, ask how our team can work with your sales team for virtual meetings, roundtables, and motivational seminars. You can contact us through our website or call today, 919-267-9871. Now back to our show.
And, you know, I'm starting to realize I had this opening all wrong. We don't want everyone listening today to really become a sales rebel, right? You're looking for the type of people that are really going to embrace it, understand it, and then put it into use. Am I right?
Yeah, we are looking for a tribe. We know that not everybody's a part of our tribe, but we also understand that people are seeking this, right? That people are tired of the mediocre. They're tired of the status quo. They're tired of being told no from a buyer, you know, because they've called them 19 times over the last 6 months. And furthermore, you know, like we both know just from being in business in general, you know, that there are stories of like, yeah, I called on this person for 4 years and they finally told me you're so persistent, I let you in. Right. Well, we never really get the rest of that story. We never really understand like that the negotiations were rigorous and like almost, you know, depressing, you know, when it came to the outcome. We don't learn that like there's no relationship built there. All we hear is like, oh, if I call on somebody for 4 years, they're going to do business with me. You know, like, cool, persistence, you know, like people say in the sales world, it takes 11 to 16 touches to get someone's attention. That's because your touches suck. I'm sorry to break it to you. But if you do something that causes attention, them to respond, you know, from an attention standpoint, even if it's bad, even if they write you back and say, I freaking hate what you just sent me. It made me my skin crawl, never contact me again. Listen, for the last 3 years, you've been reaching out to that person with no response. And so congratulations, you got one, right? And that helps you to also identify like that person's perspective, whether or not they're part of your tribe in the first place. And I would also say that that's part of your A-B testing of getting in touch with people too. Like what will offend people, you know, in a healthy way, and what will offend them in an unhealthy way. And being okay with the fact that some people are just not going to like you. It's fine. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. No, even no matter what you're selling, you're looking for the people who want to work with you, need what you're selling, and that are going to relate with you. And if you're spending all your time on the wrong prospects, you're not going to go. Then, you know, that person that they worked on for 4 years, that's one of those bad stories that all of a sudden somebody thinks, hey, I just keep doing the same thing every day and it's going to pay off. They're not then looking for that. Okay, what do I need to change? You know, what do I need to do different? Or who should I be prospecting a little bit different than I am now? One of the things that I think I've seen you're a big believer in is something you call radically educating people right up front. And I love that because to me, that's something that we weren't taught 30 years ago. You know, I was doing this when you were out there hiding behind the copy machines, right? And, you know, the Glengarry, Glenn Ross, some of the movies, the Boiler Room that you've probably seen and you shook your head like they didn't really do those things. They did. How do you show that radical, you know, engage, give them things, show them stuff right up front?
Yeah, so what we see that as inside of our system, which we call it the reason theory, which is radically educate and share one's narrative. And so we lead with radical education. And really, again, like white papers and brochures and a cold call don't radically educate people. They just create some type of awareness. But typically it's the kind where people are indifferent to you still. And so we believe in getting some kind of emotional response, good or bad. right? And because of that, radical education has to occur. And so if I sent you a video, you know, that was on a on an iPad that was built into a box, you know, that was, you know, 4 feet in diameter, that showed up with a logistics company, and it said, play me. And it had nothing else on it, no business card, no nothing. You're going to hit play, right? And that's radical education. The other side of it is people say all the time, they're like, doesn't that cost a fortune to do that stuff? Listen to me, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to play the price game, if you want to be cheap, if you want to sit around and count your dollars like your fingers, then yeah, you'll have outcomes that are also cheap. You'll have outcomes that don't give you what you desire from that perspective of being, of creating wealth for yourself. Go all in. Commit. And if you have the desire to create a healthy environment for yourself and for your success and for your community. And again, I'll tell you right now, to go with that, that when it comes to radical education, when we were just talking a little bit about emotional responses, that I can't tell you how many people did tell me, like, this is dumb, this is unprofessional, right? As their first response, right? Because the first response is always going to be a pretty raw one. Like, let's imagine that that same person that said that, that their father was dying of cancer. Let's say that they had just gotten into a car accident several days ago and found out that they're going to have to go to the chiropractor for the next 6 years just to be able to, like, maintain not having a, you know, a achy body. Yeah, they probably aren't going to like anything that you just did because they're not in the mood for anything in life, right? So we have to also put context.
We don't know what they're going through when we're talking with somebody. Nope.
Always, right? So radical education is about awareness just as much as it's about radically educating somebody. And I'll tell you this, that when people would say things like that, you know, that to me, I would always say, that's your first response, you know, in my head, I would say, and I would forgive them for it. I wouldn't rebuttal. I wouldn't, you know, I would simply send them the prayer hands, you know, or I apologize, have a great week, you know, response. Just simple communication, no excuses, no but, right? But the improvisational theory of yes and my and would always be something else. So let's say, like, 6 months down the road, the guy comes out of his office, same guy that just told me I was the most unprofessional POS he's ever met in his life because I sent him a crumpled up piece of paper that was supposed to make him laugh. And he comes out of his office and his car just got detailed. And he's like, what's this? You know, and the guy hands him a thank you note and says, this is from somebody else. And there's a little handwritten note from Dale that says, I just didn't want to ruin my reputation based on a crumpled up piece of paper. I wanted you to understand that my heart is to serve. And you never have to talk to me again, but I did this out of, you know, kindness of my own heart. I don't expect anything from you whatsoever, but I just hope that you'll forgive my initial outreach. And I'll tell you right now that, sure, like, I did business with some of those people, but for the most part, like, I never had an expectation of doing business with them. And so when that would happen, what typically formed was a friendship. What typically formed was something so much bigger than a transaction ever could be in the first place. Somebody that would pray for me if I was feeling blue, or that would send help if I needed it, or that would be at my events, you know, when I needed support, right? It goes deeper than just having somebody to pay you money, right? That's not what life is. When you die, your money goes, right? It's gone. You don't take it. Nobody remembers your net worth unless you're Bill Gates. You know, then people go, who got his money? But there's no legacy in those dollars, right? But there is in relationships. There is in the experiences we create. There is in the memorable ideology, you know, or memorable experiences that we create behind our ideology in the first place.
When I was out on the street selling every day, and I was in direct mail sales, so yeah, we weren't as bad as Copier, but we weren't very far away from you. We were pretty close. Very few business owners got excited when we walked in to sell them something that they needed, but they really didn't want to pay for. I'd come home at night, I'd sit down at dinner, talk with my wife, and you know, there were certain business owners that I would go back to see whether they were buying, whether they stopped buying, if the product didn't work. We built relationships. And there were others that, man, if they weren't a client anymore, I was never going back, because you just, you know, there was something that happened and you weren't connecting. You know, they just didn't care. That we were nothing more than just a salesperson. They weren't looking to build a relationship. And, you know, you're talking about that story with the getting the car detailed. What I used to love is when a business would throw me out, which happened every day, right? They'd go in and they'd get out, you know. I used to wear a shirt with my company name, the company I worked for. It was Clipper Magazine. They've been in and out of it. Orlando. You may have seen it. It's the coupon book, all the ads. Yeah. And some reps would tell me, they'd say, you know, I don't wear that shirt. What, you don't wear that because some people, before you even talk, they tell you to get out. And I'd say, well, at some point, they're going to know why I'm here. So you know what? I want them to know up front, and we'll talk about it. And those that would throw me out quick, you know what? I'd go back a couple weeks later, and I would drop off an ad sample. And I'd say, hey, I know you don't want to do anything with me, but I saw this, and it really spoke to me of your business. You know, use it with your billboard or use it with something else. And, you know, over time, you would go in, and some of those would, you know, they'd grab you one day and say, do me a favor, sit down, tell me a little bit more about what you're doing. And that's the investment that I think is so important. If you really care about people, you'll do those steps. And those that don't, if you're just looking at them as, are they buying from me today? Am I making money on them? They're not building long-term relationships.
I love that, bro. I absolutely agree with it too.
Now let's go back real quick, because when you were talking about the person that went in and they're having whatever's going on in their life and they're like, you know what, this is terrible. I don't want anything to do with this. One of the things I think you also really talk about is always responding. Okay, you know, no matter what you get hit with, good or bad, you're always responding, you're always coming back, and you're continuing that conversation. Can you give us a couple of examples? If somebody's out there right now, whether they're emailing, direct messaging, knocking on a door, how do they get in that mindset where they're always giving some sort of response, something positive to take back?
Yeah, so I would say that you're the underdog in those moments, and to look at yourself like one, and that your effort is going to be all that really matters to the outcome in those moments. So just because the front desk lady said, you know, we don't take walk-ins, get out, or the assistant said, he doesn't take cold calls, get off the phone, you dummy, right? Like just because those little things happen doesn't mean that there isn't success to be had inside of the organization. In your head, you create your own roadblock. So if you tell yourself, well, how am I supposed to get an appointment with him if the people that are guarding him, you know, aren't emotionally available to me? Well, that's when you start to break down their process as well too. And I'll tell you two ways that I would give actionable and tangible advice around this. One is a market tool that we have inside of the Rebellion, which is to spoil the individuals who are the assistants or that are the receptionists. Because in the sales world, you probably know this, bro, is that most salespeople have a nickname for those folks, the window witch or the gatekeeper.
The gatekeeper.
It's very disrespectful. And so the mindset behind it has to shift. We have to start saying like, no, it's a human doing their job. And their job is to make sure that you don't get to that person because you're wasting their time because you're selling something. Just get to the facts first and foremost. It doesn't matter if you think you have the bee's knees are the best thing since sliced bread. They don't know. You haven't radically educated them. There's no emotional context. There's no sense of curiosity, no familiarity, no relevance, no impact. There's nothing. It's just you trying to get a favor done for yourself. And sure, people love to help. And so it's a good place to start asking for help. But at the same time, they're always weary. They've been burned enough by salespeople. They've been burned enough in their personal life. They've been burned enough in all kinds of instances that people just have a natural guard up, even when they're just nice, right? They naturally aren't going to just say, here's my social security number, right? It doesn't happen. However, with the proper market tool around creating, you know, not necessarily an expectation, but a particular outcome, right? One of them that we call is, or that we use the most is that we make these little wristbands. They're like little rubber wristbands, and they say on it, who rules the world? ? And next to it, it says reception or Todd's assistant or Catherine, right? Sometimes we'll even put their name. Now it's fun to put like their role, right? Because in the office, it, you know, they can kind of walk around with a trophy, right? Like I rule the world in here, guys, right? So bow to me, right? And, and it's true. They are the most important person in the office in my dealings. But furthermore, if you were to call back behind that and say, hey, how do you like that wristband? And they go, oh, it was you. Who is this? Because you sent it to them without putting your name on it, telling them who you were. that drives curiosity, right? And if you do it in a way that's experiential, little box with it, you know, a fun aesthetic, right? It creates something for them that they'll never forget. And then when you say like, yeah, this is Dale over at the Sales Rebellion, and but that doesn't really matter. What matters is, and this is where you go one step further, is did you see what was on the inside of the wristband? And most people, you know, inside of this drop in general don't see it anyway, right? But we put little QR codes inside of the wristbands and they go, what do you mean? And say, take it off and look on the inside, and they find it. And they're like, oh, it's a little QR code. Like, scan it with your phone and then call me later. And then you just hang up. You don't say bye. You just hang up. It's so much fun to do, right? And they're like,
that QR code,
like, this morning.
You've got that radical education coming up when they QR scan, is that?
Oh, yeah, man. The QR code is the one hitter quitter, bro. Cause it takes them to a landing page that you've aesthetically archetyped yourself, right? Because you want to meet all the different nodes of the way someone's brain activates when they head to something like that in the moment. They're scanning it on their phone. The whole process is very much something that people don't get to experience in most cases in business. And so by designing something that looks very pleasing, that causes more curiosity, that heads to a video, that's not just you going, hey, blah, 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 but providing experiences, having other people even discuss, you know, who you are and why you're trying to meet with them instead of it just being you in those moments. Third party credibility, right? There's lots of little pieces of that puzzle. The second thing that I would give from a tangible takeaway would be call someone else in the office. And don't call somebody else in the office and be like, yeah, you know, I'm trying to get to Tammy and her assistant, you know, won't let me in. So I figured I'd call you. Call somebody else in the office, and that's where you do your personalization. So you've been in sales with a firm for a couple of years. I figured from one sales person to the next that, you know, maybe we could do a little bit of networking. And a caveat to that would be that I've been trying to sell your business on my products and services. And so I'd love to teach you a little bit more about what I do at some point so you can see if it's valuable to do an introduction for me. But regardless, I got a vast network. I'd love to introduce you to them. So let's earn some trust with each other. Grab a coffee, virtual or in person, right? Doesn't matter, but go build a relationship with somebody else inside of the organization, right? Especially because if it's business only, you know, inside of an office, you can still justify that kind of behavior. For all my people out there thinking they don't want to build relationships, well, that is the number one key to being successful in business, is to communicate with others. Right. And so think of it from that perspective, that principally you're just getting somebody in a position where maybe they have referrals for you outside of that business even, and that you never get that business, but you met somebody that knows three people that, you know they can hook you up with. So,
yeah, and you might have just made their day, because how many times are they getting that call saying, hey, I'd like to network with you and do that? And, you know, what I'm thinking is everybody who's listening that just the light bulb went off and they're like, man, I gotta try. Why am I not doing that? They're the rebels, right? They're the ones, those that see that. That's what we're looking for here. Because, and I'll tell you the other thing that just got me, and I'm a little sad, because I don't think I'm gonna get to see it, but I think you will get to see it. I want that QR scan someday with the technology. When they scan it, I want it to come up and say, "Hey, Catherine, thanks for coming in today." So that's got to be close, right? That can't be too far.
No, you can already do it. You can already do it,
really?
Bro. We teach people how to do it all day long. It's very easy to be able to set it up where a QR is individualized on the print. And so this is where it comes down to this identity of, you can't do 500 QR codes on 500 wristbands. You got to say, I want to get in front of these 25 people, right? And then you make the effort to get in front of those 25 people, right? One of my silent mentors, who's now a friend, and it's an amazing thought, right? Stu Hynek. I read his book back in 2012. I was already doing this stuff. You know, I read the story about the guy that sent $1,000 swords to his prospects and that it had an inscription on it. And then he called behind it. And I thought, like, I do this. This is genius. And so I became a very big fan of Stu Hynek in the process, and allowed him to also speak into the wacky, zany ideas that I already had. And I'll tell you that the one thing I learned from him was that if you wanted an appointment, you can get it. And so I made that happen. I got an appointment with anybody I ever wanted to. There's nobody that was on my list that I didn't at least have a conversation with until I you know, up until the day that I quit my job and started the Sales Rebellion.
I think that the first time that a seller walks in or makes that phone call, I can remember walking in, and that Catherine, she would be like, You know what, Tom? The CEO is going to be here tomorrow morning. He's bringing in payroll. Come back tomorrow. When you get that person in your corner, suddenly they're going to see all those things you're talking about. Deata, I think we could talk easily for another 2 hours. This has been a lot of fun, but I really appreciate your time. I'm in. You know, I want to be a rebel. I'm wondering, will I be your oldest? Do you have many boomers that are rebels?
Believe it or not, one of my first clients was a boomer, and I started coaching a 22-year-old kid and a 48-year-old individual when I first started, and then shortly after that, I got a guy that was over 55, and he joked and he was like, treat me like your dad, because he was like, he would have been my dad's, close to my dad's age if my dad was still alive anyway, right? So I had a lot of fun with him, but I'll tell you right now that he's one of my best references, right? So is the 22-year-old kid. So is the 44-year-old guy as well, too, the Gen Xer, right? Like, all generations can become rebels, bro. And so welcome to the rebellion. We're happy to have you here, dude.
Fantastic. I want to sell local. I want to be a rebel. And you and I think we need to talk more, because this has been a lot of fun. Can you show the T-shirt one more time?
Braden Business Systems, Indianapolis. Right. They're actually in right outside of Indianapolis, Indiana. But
fantastic.
If you live there, get in touch with them. Network with them.
You know what? I have my first sponsor, which I'm excited. I didn't know that was going to happen. I'll invoice them later, but that is great. And I'm assuming I get a TSR hat being sent my way, so I'll message you my address. I will proudly wear that. And do me a favor, and I know you got to go. Just tell our listeners, how do they find out? How do they join the rebellion? Tell us real quick about your podcast, and then unfortunately we'll have to wrap up, but this has been great.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the time today and the opportunity to direct people toward my channel. Selling Local is the name of our podcast. You can find us on any major podcast platform, or go to salesrebellion.com and click on the podcast tab on salesrebellion.com. You can find most of my information. You can connect with me, set an appointment with me to learn more about one-on-one sales training, group sales coaching, team sales coaching, the works. We also have some stuff that's upcoming that you just want to keep your eye out for. Very low cost Netflix subscription style rebel training that people can get on a daily basis in their own time, in their own ways. We also have online curriculum that people can take too, that you can find on the website. But most importantly, come and chill and hang out with me and my content. So go to Google, type in my name, and have fun for the next 9 pages of listening and watching and reading articles I've written over the last couple of years, podcasts I've been on. I've been on hundreds of podcasts. I mean, consume the content, because everything I do is to help people become better at sales. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that, right? And if you like daily content, head to linkedin.com/IM/copywarrior. And you can find me on every social site, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, @SalesRebellion or /SalesRebellion.
Fantastic. Dale, I appreciate it. And we will talk again soon.
Thanks for having me on.
So that's it. That's today's show. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to subscribe and follow. We hope you make us a part of your week. And don't forget to share with your friends and coworkers.
Should we mention the website?
Sure. The website, okboomerteachmesales.com.
And where can they engage with us?
LinkedIn @Thomas J. Bloomer.
We hope to see you there.